transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're back at it with an exciting show, starting off with our music editor, Sharon Hyland, talking about the crazy that was the MTV Video Music Awards. We then chat with psychologist Dr. Derek Swain about how to help your child return to school free of anxiety and stress, especially if they're changing schools or switching from elementary to high school. Up next is social media expert Patrick Charles talking about social media and movie casting, and we also talk to British band Rudimental about their career and working with artists like Emily Sandé.
Capture your need for sound.
As per usual, this year's MTV Video Music Awards were a little nutty, a little crazy, and a little crazy again. Joining us to talk about all of this madness is our music editor, Sharon Hyland.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Hello, Kelly.
Welcome back to the Kelly Alexander
Show.
It's
been a long time. What did I do?
I don't know where you've been.
Well,
I do
findable.
Know where you've been. Yeah. Busy summer, Sharon.
I'm here now.
I appreciate that.
I think you lost my number for a while.
Maybe. I'm very excited to have you on because the show for the MTV Video Music Awards was, I don't know, it was a bit anticlimactic, if you will.
Boring?
Yeah. Right. So let us start with the big build-up to Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
My thing, I guess, with it, and then you can share your thoughts, is that she has already come to this thing wearing a meat dress. Where else can she go?
She can be honest.
Right.
She cannot hide the stuff that she was trying to block from everybody finding out. Remember that whole little, I'm coming off Twitter and this is potentially career damaging?
Mm-hmm.
I get it. We don't need to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But for a person in her position, with the followers that she has, her little monsters might appreciate some all-around honesty. Because now, whatever it is, again, none of our business, just looks like she's holding back.
Right. What did you think of her performance?
Well, I like her.
Right.
So
I like the song.
I think she's got a real, she comes from a performance side. So it's not, I don't think it's anything that she has to work to be better at. I think she does work to be better at it. I just don't think she needs to. Whereas there's other pop sensations that have to figure out how to perform live. She's not that. She's great.
Where's your take on this, as I sort of divert for just a second, what's your takes on this, on the songs, her song versus Katy Perry's Roar? Because they both came out within a day of each other, and it's been sort of the battle of the charts, if you will. Which one do you prefer?
I think it's funny for, it's this sort of roller coaster for Katy Perry, because she is giving us everything. She is giving us all the information. I don't know that we want it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are all on board for this. Okay, well, let's see what happens. She comes out and she's got, you know, pants on fire shorts, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean she's a liar for pants on fire?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's sort of, I don't know. Am I supposed to cheer her on because she's come back? She's supposed to come back. Or is there a shelf life for pop stars? I think that there's a shelf life. You only are supposed to have this much
relevance.
Success.
Yeah.
Relevance, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, are you a pop star? Mm. Or are you just a well-seasoned musician?
Right.
And is she that? I think she can sing very well. And I think if she wants to be that, she may not want to come out in shorts that are on fire. And always be, you know, that, oh, we're back.
Anthemic.
And this is,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was good, too.
Right.
That's just me being crusty, I guess.
I appreciate your efforts, Sharon.
Thank you.
So next would be Miley Cyrus. What the hell was that?
I like her hair.
The hair is cool.
The hair is cool.
But she said, I don't know if you noticed if you watched the pre-show, but she said that whatever she was about to do that night, that it was a movement she's working on. Like, this is a movement. I'm like, a movement?
She should have worked on her movement before she left the
yeah.
house.
Oh!
Then we wouldn't have to deal with that crap. What?
Yeah.
See that? Uh-huh.
There was a lot going on that probably shouldn't have been going on.
Yeah.
And I get if she's, I still don't understand the teddy bear, you know, the crazy teddy bears, what that was supposed to be.
Is it like a drug reference? Is that what you see when you're all lit up on the pills? I don't know.
On the Molly that she mentions in the song.
Well, exactly.
Which they bleeped out, which was interesting.
Interesting, exactly, because you sort of have to acknowledge who your fans are. And if your fans are, I'm not saying they have to be 5 years old.
She's fighting so hard to be an adult, it's enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's just go transition. Don't make a big thing about it.
Well, exactly. Transition. She's still applying that you have to strike while the iron's hot. That's not what our age group, yours and mine, let's say, are well, they better release an album.
Mm-hmm.
No. We want quality. We want the goods. Mm-hmm. And if it takes you 3 years to do it, great. I'm not going to forget about you.
You're right.
But the tweeny package of mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. might forget right. about it because they are going to get older and have different expectations and different interests. So are you appealing to them or are you trying to transition? Because I don't know that you can do both.
Right.
And it seems like she's trying to do both.
And then...
And by transition, I mean as an artist whose gender will remain intact.
Exactly.
Just want to be clear.
The transition or the segue into Robin Thicke, odd. And I was disappointed in Robin Thicke's performance. He has the song of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he's trying to sort of not distance himself from it, but he's trying to push the second single.
Well, he didn't win the award for Summer, though.
Yeah, but One Direction.
He just happens to
have it. Exactly.
Have it, I mean.
If you really sort of are impartial and not voting because you love One Direction, because that's why they won. Mm-hmm. Did you see the voting? It was crazy. Like, I think Robin Thicke had 34,000 votes when I checked in the afternoon of the day of the VMAs. And at that point, One Direction was at 7 million.
Wow.
And you know that that's not musical quality that's being voted on. It's the cuteness factor and all the little teeny boppers that are voting for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Robin, because to
but
me,
that's
Robin,
what they like, though. Yeah. And that's their summer.
Right.
And are the MTV Awards for kids? Are they for everybody?
Right.
You know, you really have to end right. up demographically dissecting.
I guess. So what did you think of his performance, though? Hmm. It was nothing to me. Like, I was really expecting, especially because I'd seen him perform on the BET Awards a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was amazing, and he had Pharrell come out, and it was just great. And this transition with Miley, and I don't know, not cool.
Maybe he was just playing it down so that Justin could get all right. the credit.
Speaking of Justin.
I mean, Robin Thicke was here first sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we've known Justin since he was a little boy and everything, mm-hmm. but as far as this style of music, he's mm-hmm. been doing it longer than Justin.
Exactly.
So... He doesn't have to prove anything to everybody, no. but
this was his chance because MTV.
But this is his chance to prove something
yes.
to somebody.
this was his chance to get all the fringe people that don't really follow music. You know what I mean? Like, because I like a lot of people watch award shows, whether they're that into it or not. I think a lot of people would have been watching MTV just because it's on all the entertainment services. It was like, it's coming up. It's tonight. It's whatever.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of fringe people would have been. So this was his chance to get more mainstream fans, I think.
Maybe he doesn't want them.
Maybe
he's just an artist for art's sake.
Possibly.
And happy doing what he's doing.
Excellent. Justin Timberlake.
Super cute.
Go.
I love Justin.
Mm-hmm.
He does everything well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's funny. Who doesn't like a funny guy who can mm-hmm. also dance and sing like that? He's great. I thought that the NSYNC reunion itself, a little boring.
A little short, like 37 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was expecting... Because he did, 12 minutes or something? It was crazy. Like, he was on stage for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So you would have thought he could have given his boys at least 60 seconds.
But is it his to give? Does he decide?
Because I feel
what a weirdo position that must have been to be
probably.
In.
Probably. But I feel he would have, this was for him. I think he would have had the...
Well, if we look back even on that performance, we think to J.C. Chazé's last note.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh, they're going into another song. No, he just wanted to remind them, the world, I suppose, that he could sing too.
Maybe.
Yeah, we remember.
Okay.
Back to you, JT.
What do you think about Jimmy Fallon calling him the president of pop? Do you think this is going to stick? Is it going to be
new? Oh, that's cute.
The new phrase?
Well, yeah. Anything's going to stick if it's worth sticking.
Because JT actually tweeted that out after.
Smart.
President of pop.
I like it.
So, we're good at that?
Does it mean he's only got 4 years? Can he run for re-election?
He probably will. I like that his parents were there. And
yeah.
That was great.
And
but
he thanked them properly.
He
I like
did.
How he thanked his folks, mm-hmm. is what he referred to them. I like that he thanked the guys in NSYNC as saying any half of the awards, half of the Moon Men that mm-hmm. he'd won were with those guys.
He never thanked his wife, and she wasn't there.
Bum, bum, bum.
Did you notice?
I did notice. And then...
He was wearing his ring. Great.
Is there any rumor?
No, but I just, it's conspicuous to think that this is a huge night for him musically. I mean, it's not the Oscars, but it's not the Grammys either, but it's a huge event for him to get the MJ Award. And
yeah.
She wasn't there. I don't know if she's on a movie shoot. I don't know, but
maybe she was just at the movies.
Okay.
No, really, maybe. I'm his wife. Let me in.
Exactly.
No.
Or, and he didn't thank her. I know often the spouse gets forgotten, but he had two chances to thank her.
And remember.
And did not.
No.
So
we'll see about that.
All right.
Maybe he was so distracted by Taylor Swift on the monitor all night long.
I know.
Why is it that MTV thinks that anybody cares that much
I know.
That Taylor Swift knows the words to every single song? And good for her. Because she looked like she was having a really nice time.
Yeah, she did.
Mm-hmm. But does she have a side deal with them that says, you must have me every other shot, which is what it seemed like.
Yep.
I don't want to see that. And again, I'm of a different age group than the people that actually might want to see more of her.
Mm-hmm.
However.
Mm-hmm. Spread the love.
Spread the love. There's other people there.
Well, it was either her or Jaden and Will Smith.
Who looked like he was in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Jaden.
Yeah. Like, and what's her name? Cricket? I don't remember her name. What's her name? The...
Whip my hair back and forth.
That girl, yeah.
Right.
She was chewing at one point. I don't know. She looked like she was not in a happy space to be there. I don't even know why they're. But like you said, it would have been cool. They had so many opportunities. Even if they did do a few extra on Taylor and Selena, they could have shown like TLC was there. You know,
a lot of people.
There was
it was like they only had one camera.
I know.
Go to Taylor Swift. Go to Taylor Swift. What?
Just stay on Taylor Swift.
But it's every award show. Yeah. Every MTV Awards show. Mm-hmm. I don't care that much. And that's sort of, I think it feeds the dislike on her.
Right, yeah.
She's a bit aggravating if all you ever see is her.
What did you think of her comment to It Looks Like Harry Styles about saying that this song you know is about you and it got me one of these?
Well, I wonder about her too, though. That's her thing.
Yeah.
That's her crutchy.
I don't know why. And that was the funny thing is I was surprised that she did it because it's actually been a few months that people haven't pinned her to that. Like saying like, oh, what song is this about now? Or who's this about? It's been like, I find she's separated from it a bit in the last 6 months. Like, because some of the album isn't just necessarily pointed, her Red album. So I felt like she just sunk herself again with that comment. Like she brought herself back to, oh, I've written about this guy now. You know, because I felt like she had managed to separate herself a little bit from being that negative Nelly about the boys.
I think it comes with her age group, too. Like, maybe. She's...
Oh, 22.
Oh, you. 22.
And finally, out of all of this, is there a moment that sticks out for you, good or bad? Because I know we said in the grand scheme, fairly boring. But is anything, like, really... Bruno Mars, I really liked his performance.
I like that he won, too.
Yeah.
He's good. He's he's the real deal, too. But again, I'm speaking as like a parent, you know, because I think Taylor Swift is very talented. She can obviously write a song and execute it and perform very well. But she's
What do you think about Kevin Hart and his like a lot of people love him. And I'm like, he's floundering. Like, I felt he was floundering
it
last
night.
It felt
like that.
It was, and then to get himself out of, he's like, give it up!
Yeah.
Give it up! Like this. And I'm like, no.
No, you don't get to scream for it.
No, it's very good. All right, then. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll have you back sooner than maybe months, like last time.
You better. I'm going to get Taylor Swift on you. She'll have me.
This is our music editor, Sharon Hyland. You can learn more about her on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's that time of year again when parents are getting their children all ready to go back to school. School supplies are bought, new school outfits and uniforms are ready. But is your child really excited to be going back to school? Many children have fears and anxieties about starting another year or going to a new school, which can affect the whole family. Registered psychologist and counselor Dr. Derek Swain joins us to talk about ways to prepare your child for the upcoming school year. Dr. Swain, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Yes, thank you.
What kinds of behavior should parents be looking out for in the weeks leading up to the start of school?
Well, I think it's generally anything which is out of the norm for the child. So some children might become more agitated, more excitable, more loud. Others might tend to be more withdrawn and quiet. And so those will be indicators where the child is doing something sort of out of their norm.
How can parents prepare their child for the start of the new school year? Like, do you sort of have to ease them into it? And also, I guess, with regards to maybe even sleeping schedules, that might have to change as well.
Well, that's really important because typically kids are used to staying up late or later and getting up later, and they need to get back to a regular school schedule. So it's probably a good idea to try to start that as much as 2 weeks before school starts. it's a function of anticipating what the child may well be experiencing on return to school. What's it going to be like for them, particularly if it is a new school? Have they had any familiarity with the physical facility to start with? Who is going to be attending that school with them? Anybody that they know? What stories have they heard? So getting any kind of sense as to what the child might be anticipating.
Is it also important or particular importance if you have a child that is sort of graduating to the next level, for example, you know, starting grade one or starting, you know, leaving elementary school and going to grade 7 or, you know, leaving high school, like stuff like that. Is that even more of importance?
Yes, those are big transitions. And the start of a regular grade school is usually a time of celebration for both parents and children. But nevertheless, there could be lots of reservations about it because in many ways the children aren't sure what to expect. And so they can be worried by things that are unknown. And so there again, the best opportunity for parents to assist them is to help to forewarn or forearm them with what to expect. If there's an opportunity to visit the physical facility, to become familiar with it, to be able to talk about the friends that will be there, and what kind of teachers, what kind of classes to expect. These kinds of things all help to establish some idea in the child's mind as to what they can look forward to.
What about children who are starting a new school, which is obviously a new environment for them? Potentially, let's say they are leaving or they've moved or something like that. What can parents do to prepare them for being the quote-unquote new kid?
Well, I guess it's a good idea to talk about this as a real experience and see what the child thinks that's going to be like. Some of them are quite used to going into new circumstances. So, for example, if they've been active in sports clubs or other activities outside of school, going and joining a new organization may well be something that is somewhat familiar to them, and they could be all right. Other kids, though, of course, they could feel quite intimidated. And so it's best to just simply talk with the child and see what their thoughts are and to make statements such as, so you're off to a new school now. What do you anticipate it's going to be like? What do you think that experience will be like for you? And then follow it up by saying, well, I know that sometimes going off to a new experience can be kind of scary. And I wonder if there's some things that you're worried about. And when issues come up, then that's where you have topics where you need to find more information to help give the kids a better sense as to what the realities are of what they can anticipate.
In general, what are some of the things that actually stress out a child? Is it, you know, stuff like, am I going to like the new teacher? Is this workload going to be too much for me? Is it stuff like that, Dr. Swain?
Yeah, it's interesting because the same kinds of things that can cause a lot of excitement and enthusiasm for kids can also be causes of stress. So the notion of starting school again, seeing both old friends as well as potentially old enemies, seeing teachers that they miss as well as teachers that maybe they're not so sure they want to spend time with, looking forward to academic studies on the other side of being worried about what those academic studies might be like if the child has been struggling with particular subjects. So the knife kind of cuts both ways. There can be great enthusiasm for getting back into the rhythm, and on the opposite side, some kids might have some dread going back into a system that in which they haven't been a comfortable fit. I think it's useful to note that there are only two places in our society where we expect people to attend regularly with people who are not of their choice, and those are schools and jails. So it's an unfortunate comparison, but that seems to be the reality.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is psychologist Dr. Derek Swain. You can learn more about him at drswainpsychologist.com. What are the best ways to talk to your kids in general about going back to school, or, you know, if you are transitioning from elementary school to high school, is there a way that you need to be with them so that they realize that you're on their side?
Yeah, I think that the easiest way is to make sort of open-ended statements which encourage them to say more. And so it might be something like, you're going back to school, and I imagine that there might be a lot of excitement for you about that. What's that like? And so just trying to encourage them to speak more that way, as well as saying, well, I know that when people go back to school, sometimes they're kind of reluctant. You know, they're not so keen about it. What's that like for you? So just generally tossing out open-ended suggestions to encourage kids to say more. And then simply being attentive to the child so that you notice whether there's a little bit of hesitation perhaps in the way they speak, or whether there appears to be some genuine excitement and enthusiasm.
If things are a little bit, I shouldn't say a little bit, let's say things are not going well with transitioning your child either back to school or to a new environment, when do you consider bringing in professional help, Dr. Swain?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a hard and fast time, but as soon as you get some indication that things are not going well, it's important to first initiate the discussion with the child to see if the child has some ideas about improvement. Then it may be appropriate to talk with school personnel, particularly counselors within the school, or administrators, to find out more information about what might be happening to the child. And when you have more information like that, and if the issues seem to be significant, then that would be a good idea to have some outside involvement.
What are your biggest tips for parents over the next couple of weeks as, you know, school starts and the kids get back to it?
Well, it's anticipating the shift to school, and so setting up routines. That involves not only sleep time and wake time, but making sure that there's orderliness in the house in terms of meals and just general routines, so that the kids start to get into a habit of being prepared for the transition. As well, it's important to look at what kind of scheduling needs to be done when kids are at school, because frequently they're going to have out-of-school activities. So how is the child going to get to those activities? What adjustments need to be made within the family to accommodate those activities, etc.? So the more calm that parents can bring to the home by establishing routines and regularity, the easier it's going to be for kids.
Dr. Swain, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate all of your advice today.
My pleasure.
That is psychologist Dr. Derek Swain. Again, for more information, drswainpsychologist.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Ben Affleck has been cast as Batman in the upcoming Man of Steel sequel, and the internet has gone crazy. The fallout has been unanimously negative. We're getting used to social media being a tool for us to vent our frustrations, but is this possibly a glimpse at the future of movie casting? Joining us to talk about all of this craziness is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Good. I actually have to say I was, I guess not really one of these people that went bananas, but I was at work that night and saw it over my Twitter and I guess it was my Twitter feed actually that I got the news first.
Yeah.
And then I sort of relate it to all of my listeners on the radio station that I work for. But I didn't go nuts. Like, I didn't really put my spin on it, even though I personally also think it's not a great casting choice. But they did go nuts. Like, and I put it actually on our Facebook page, on our station Facebook page, and immediately, like, comments, like, it was like, bring, like, just everyone going nuts and putting their two cents in. So I can imagine if that was happening on my level, it was obviously doing this around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating because I don't think that a movie casting has had this kind of a backlash in a really long time. I know people were upset when Lindsay Lohan played Elizabeth Taylor, mm-hmm. but the difference is that was, you know, for a cable network film. It wasn't for something that's going to be released in theaters. And of course, there's not as many Elizabeth Taylor fans online as there are Batman and Superman fans online.
Right.
So yeah, big difference.
And in your estimation, because obviously you're tracking a bunch of this stuff, so more negative than positive with this casting choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Almost unanimously negative. There have been a few articles saying that, you know, it's not such a bad idea. Here are a few points as to why he would be good. But you know, it's just interesting because all of a sudden people have such big opinions about things. They always did, but I mean, it's funny with social media how you're able to vent that opinion and have people really take notice.
Now, do you think it's because it's a comic franchise that it's gone this nuts? Or, like, would it happen, let's say, I'm just trying to think of, like a Transformer, let's say the Transformer series or something.
Yeah, I think they're kind of on the same level, those two franchises. I think that Transformers and comic books, I think, have a lot of the same fans. There's a big crossover anyway. Not necessarily everyone. I know that, you know, nerd boys who like Superman are rolling their eyes right now. I don't like Transformers. But yeah, I think there's a lot of the same people who are interested in this stuff.
Okay. And so do you think now that, you know, a movie could ever be cast using social media? Is that really where we could be headed?
See, this is the thing, right? I think that this is the future. And that's one of the things that I think has come out of this is that you could probably do that, especially with this type of thing. Because, I mean, you know, like I said, I think that the majority of superhero comic book fans would be on social media. And I think that that would be an amazing way to cast a film. Like, you literally just ask people, who do you think would be good? Because it gives the actors, like, if you choose someone else rather than Ben Affleck, right? Mm-hmm. If let's say they threw him out of this film now and they chose somebody else because of what people were saying online, think of how crazy that is. Mm-hmm. Think of the idea that, you know, the studio would say to this person, like, well, listen, we've got about, you know, 100 million tweets that say you would be the best person to play this role. And it's like, wow, that's pretty interesting. Now, will those people turn out to see the film? That's the even more interesting part. But nonetheless, it would be cool to cast a movie this way.
Yeah, and this is kind of like Monday morning quarterbacking a little bit, like sitting here making your, you know, these decisions or saying, like, that, you know, Ben in this instance is going to suck in the film. Do you think that with what has happened, do you think the movie company is worried?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they've got to feel a little twinge of something right now when they see that they let this news come out. They let this news be leaked that, yep, you know, Ben is going to be in this movie, which, you know, isn't going to be out for, what is it, a year and a half, 2 years? Mm-hmm. And people are so upset. They must feel like, wow, we thought people would be kind of happy that we're giving them this news. So they must be kind of scratching their heads going like, well, I guess any reaction is a good reaction.
Exactly. And do you think that in the grand scheme of things, this is going to hurt the Batman franchise?
Well, I don't think in the scheme of things, just because they seem to keep rebooting the franchise.
Right.
I love the way, like, it seems like 2 weeks ago that Christian Bale was in the quote unquote last Batman movie. And now it's like, oh, by the way, in the next one, we've got Ben Affleck. It's really crazy. I mean, the character's back. And of course, if the next film works, then there'll be a new Batman franchise, maybe with three movies starring Ben Affleck.
Wow. And it's funny because, like you said, like, I think a lot of people maybe thought it was going to end with Christian Bale. And obviously, it's not with this. And do you think now, like, because obviously Ben has heard of the backlash, like, even if he's not really a social media guy, it would have been all over the papers anyway. Do you think this is going to make him want to be even better at it? Or do you think this might make him be like, screw this, I'm not doing it?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because if he does it, which, you know, I think he will do it, if he does it, there's going to be so much scrutiny and he's going to be stressed about it, even though, of course, you know, celebrities never sort of let on that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't do it, if he says, oh, scheduling conflicts, everybody's going to say, ah, we won. We got him off the film. So it's really interesting to see what's going to happen next.
And where do you sit on this? Like, are you thinking he's going to be okay? Or do you think, like, who would you have picked for this role?
Well, I think he's going to be okay. I think the only problem is what people are really reacting to is that normally when they do these things, when they make these films, they usually pick somebody who's kind of, I don't want to say a B actor, but somebody who's not a big, well-known star. Right. And it's almost like he's not nerdy enough to play it.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm saying? He's kind of Mr. America as it is. He's got the Oscars and he's well liked. And do you know what I mean? Like, it's like Christian Bale is such a dark character
that people
would be afraid of him if they met him. And I think that, you know, him playing Batman, everybody's like, okay, that's cool, sure. But I think that if you choose someone who's well-liked, like if you choose, you know, Justin Timberlake to play Spider-Man, I think people will flip out because, you know, Timberlake is sort of everywhere. It's almost as if the people who like these films want the person cast to be more like them.
Oh, right. Like underground or something.
Yeah. Okay. That's the impression I get. They don't want somebody famous and smiley to get one of these roles.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And it was just funny because when he did get cast, I guess my opinion of it And I do think he's a great actor. And the funny thing is, I actually just watched Argo this weekend. I hadn't seen it yet. And, I, you know, it was obviously a really great film. And he did a great job being very subtle in that movie, like, you know, being the lead actor. So he does have a lot of talent. But I guess, like, I just, it sort of reminded me of when George Clooney did Batman. I didn't think that went over very well either.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are comparing this to. That sort of casting. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit too, like, these guys were a little bit too Hollywood. That's how they're seen, I think.
That's right. Okay, cool. And I know the MTV Video Music Awards just passed. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Were you happy to know that NSYNC came back, even though it was for like 37 seconds?
I didn't even know they broke up.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. I thought JT was going to go back with them at any moment. No, I think that was a really good idea. And I think that's an interesting, it's an interesting comment on how we look at, you know, quote unquote history. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, I mean, it's like they're the Beatles, right?
Right. I know.
Because the thing is, if they were that hot when Justin Timberlake left, he probably wouldn't have left.
Exactly.
You know, he probably wouldn't have seen that as his jumping off point and said, okay, this is a sinking ship. I'm out of here. Let's start with the solo records. So I think it's funny how our minds work. You know, nostalgia has been sort of, you know, shortened to, like, I don't know, what is it, like 5 years, 7 years or something since he's performed with them. So it's interesting that we're all like, oh, NSYNC is getting back together, as if they're the Beach Boys, mm-hmm. you know?
And I think with what's going on, it's almost like it's been built up to this. Seeing as how, like, you know, New Kids have been back,
right.
Backstreet Boys have been back, like, and even like some of the female groups are you know, Salt and Pepper are going around, like, it's just like that, you know, there's groups, there's like Boys to Men back together, like, so I think this was the last group that we hadn't seen back together. So even though I guess it was for 37 seconds, there was such a build up to see if they could actually pull something off together.
Well, I'm still waiting to see Color Me Bad.
There we go. I love them.
When they get back together, the circle will be complete.
Exactly. Awesome. Patrick, thank you for your time today.
Thanks. I'll see you soon.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles, and you can learn more about him on his Twitter account, @GetPatrick. Also on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Kessie from the British electronic music group Rudimental. Kessie, thank you for joining us on the show.
Hello, thank you for having us.
So, can you tell us how you all came together to become Rudimental?
Yeah, well, myself, Leon, and Piers, we actually grew up together. So we sort of known each other right from sort of primary school ages. Well, primary school sort of starting from six onwards. So we've known each other right from when we were really young as kids. We love both music and soccer, as you call it in the States. So, yeah, we sort of grew up with the two loves, music and soccer, and sort of pursued them as we got older. And, yeah, we just kept going with the music, and then everything came together, really. And then we met Amir, which is the fourth member of Rudimental, a few years ago. And all the music we made just had such great chemistry and seemed to really work. So, yeah, we sort of came together very naturally like that. Basically came together through a friendship.
How would you define the group and define your sound?
Well, we like to call it the Rudimental sound. It's basically a sound of all the influences we've grown up with. We grew up in East London, and we were surrounded by so many different cultures and different influences and different music. And it's basically a mashup of everything that we've been influenced by. That's the way I like to call it.
And what groups would you say or artists influenced you guys as you were growing up together?
Oh, wow. I mean, there's so many different influences we've had. Personally, one of my favorite artists was actually Lauryn Hill. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is probably one of my favorite all-time albums. I really enjoyed the Fugees as well. And then there's four of us in Rudimental, so the different members had different influences as well. Piers was very into blues music, and his family sort of taught him blues piano and the whole sort of history of blues, so he was very into that. Leon was very into his old school garage, and Amir was sort of very into his drum and bass and jungle. And I think we all was into lots of different styles of music, and then when we come together and we create music, we get this sort of mix up of different influences and sounds, which we like to call the Rudimental sound.
Can you talk to us about your songwriting process, like when you guys all come together? Is it beats first? Is it lyrics first? Like, how does that all come together? Or does the process change depending on what song you're working on?
Yeah, I think the process does change every now and again, but predominantly we sort of write as a band. We're quite different to a lot of sort of dance acts in the way they probably write. But what we do in our studio is quite different to a lot of studios. We just have tons of different instruments set out all ready to record, and we sort of just press play and we sort of jam different ideas together and come up with new ideas, and then we sort of write songs very organically and almost in a traditional way that songs used to be written. So we sort of start off with sort of piano and guitar melodies and ideas for songs, and then create the lyrics and stuff like that, and then the beats normally come after, and the production side of things comes afterwards once we've got the song and we've got like a core idea of how we want things to sound. So it's almost quite a traditional way of sort of songwriting that we like to use.
Now, you guys have four members in the group, and does that mean that it's hard to get your voices heard because there's so many of you? And I'm sure a lot of you are probably type A personalities where you have a certain idea and you want to get it across. Does it work out pretty seamlessly?
Yeah, well, I mean, because there are four of us, when you do create music, you do get very passionate about different parts of a song or different sounds you hear or things that should be in there and things that shouldn't. You do get very passionate about it. And it's really good because we sort of all come together and agree or disagree on different things. And I think the fact that there's four of us listening to different parts and sort of suggesting what should be in there and what shouldn't sort of really adds to the rudimental sound, and we seem to come together and make the best decisions together. I mean, it's good that we have sort of slight disagreements about certain parts because it just means that we're really passionate and we kind of want to get the sound across. And I think when we come together, we just make the best decisions, and we've got such a great chemistry together that everything we make together seems to be really special.
Can you talk to us about your album Home? Is it, you know, a collection of songs, or is there like a running theme that you want your fans and new fans to take away from?
Yeah, it is a collection of songs, and we like to think, obviously, we are not singers ourselves. We have lots of different featured vocalists. We want to sort of get the perfect vocal to match the right song that we make. There's so many sort of... It takes you on a journey when you listen to that album. It's not all drum and bass. It's not just house music. It's a journey of where we've come from, what we've been listening to, and what we've always liked to produce. So it takes you on a journey, and we like to have the right vocal for the right piece of music. So, it's a collection of songs which sort of make the rudimental sound, which is shaped on what we've grown up listening to and producing and what we've been influenced by.
How do you go about finding the particular vocalist that you use? Is it people that you know, or do you sort of have an eye on someone that might be in the scene and say, hey, let's approach them?
Yeah, well, when we're looking for different vocalists, predominantly it's people we know. For example, when we found John Newman for Field of Love, we'd already actually written Field of Love as a song, and we went down to a local pub, and John Newman was just there with his guitar doing an acoustic set in a local pub singing, and we heard his voice and was like, wow, that's pretty special. That voice would sound perfect singing Field of Love. So he sort of spoke to him after he'd done a few songs on his guitar. Got him down to the studio, recorded Field of Love. We actually wrote another song with him at the studio, which was Not Giving In. And there's two amazing songs. And now he's sort of had the platform that we've given him. He's doing amazing things in the UK himself. And he's sort of had a number one himself and doing great with his own career. It's always different with some of the other vocalists. We sort of had our studio in Hackney, in East London, for a number of years, and we sort of built up a network of artists that we are really into and vocalists that we really like working with and that we have a good chemistry with. So a lot of the artists on our album are people that we've sort of grown and worked together before with. But there's also a few really well-known artists such as Alice Clare and Emily Sunday. And Emily Sunday actually came to one of our shows, which we was quite surprised about because we didn't know she was coming. And after the gig, she said, wow, she really loved our stuff and would like to work with us. So that was pretty amazing. And then we basically booked a couple studio sessions and she came down and we wrote two amazing songs together, which are on our album that we're really proud of.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Kessie from Rudimental. Make sure to check them out on their website, rudimental.co.uk. I think it's great that you were able to talk about Emily and how, you know, you've been able to collaborate with her and Alex Clare. Obviously, these are people that worldwide, their names mean something. Are there other artists or bands that you would like to collaborate with in the future?
Yeah, there's definitely artists and bands that we'd like to collaborate with in the future. I mean, we're very into finding new talent and giving new talent a platform and letting new talent be discovered and sort of molding them and bringing them up. But we do also like working with established artists. I mean, more than anything, it's all about finding the right vocal to match the right piece of music. So it doesn't matter if they're well-known or up-and-coming. But, I mean, there's so many amazing talents we'd love to work with. We actually did the Jules Holland show with Bobby Womack not too long ago. And after the show, he was just sort of saying how much he loved our sound and what we were doing. So, I mean, he would be an incredible artist to work with. Also, I sort of mentioned that we're big fans of Lauryn Hill, and Miss Education with Lauryn Hill was one of our favourite albums. So Lauryn Hill would be really special to work with. I mean, there's so many people that we would love to work with. I mean, I could go on all day.
I wanted to ask you a sort of about social media. How important is social media for the band and spreading the word and, I guess, helping maybe push your art to people around the world that are on Twitter, that are on Facebook, that are on Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, social media is very important to us. It's quite funny because there's four of us. We've all got the sort of Rudimental Twitter account installed on our phones. So we like to keep quite personal with our tweets and we try to get back to fans and sort of give them updates of how things are going. It's an amazing sort of the way social media has come on. Being able to actually talk directly to the fans is pretty special, and seeing all the reaction about our music, and it's really amazing to see. And it's hugely important in this day and age to be up to date with all your social media, let people know what's going on, and it just gives a sort of very personal feeling to us as a band and what we're doing and what we like to do and what we're about, and spreading the Rudimental sound and the Rudimental message.
What is up next for you guys as we, you know, sort of head towards 2014 and beyond?
Okay, well, I mean, we are touring pretty much all over the world at the moment. We're currently on an American leg of the tour where we're in various cities around America and Canada and different places. We're actually going from America to Australia. We're doing quite an extensive tour in Australia. Things are going really well out there in Australia for us. We've just come off a European tour and around the UK. So we're just developing our live show because we love playing as a band. We all play musical instruments. And the live show is really, really a massive thing to us. And you really get the Rudimental message and understand the Rudimental sound when after you've seen us live. We've got so much energy on stage and it's such a good vibe because it's not just the four of us, but we bring our sort of extended family. So there's some of the vocalists from the album that come with us. We've got our horn section, we've got our drummer, and we're all good friends and we've known each other such a great time. So when we go on stage, there's such a good chemistry and energy. We just have such great fun and it seems to rub off to the audience. We're doing a lot of touring and developing the live show at the moment, but we're also in the studio in between the touring and working on new material. So we're keeping things bubbling and we're just enjoying the journey and spreading the Rudimental sound and message.
Can you explain to us what the Rudimental message is? I just want everyone to have a clear understanding of what you guys are about and what you want your fans to take away from you.
Yeah, well, if you come to see us, we want to sort of spread positive energy. We want everyone to have a great time. Our album is called Home, but it doesn't mean just where we've come from. We like to say that we feel at home on stage. So wherever we're going on tour and around the world, when we're on stage, that's when we feel sort of most at home. And we like to sort of play at festivals and great sort of moments where you might have lost your friends at a festival, and you just hear this music which sort of unites everybody together, and then strangers sort of become good friends, and you just enjoy a moment where you're listening to a piece of music and everyone becomes your friends and you just have a good time. And we're all about positivity, Rudimental.
Awesome. Kessy, thank you so much for your time today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
That's Kessy from Rudimental. Make sure to check them out on their website, rudimental.co.uk.
Yo, this is Kessy from Rudimental, and we're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Bring on the remix.
Treasure, the Odeon Radio edit on the Kelly Alexander Show. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, Sharon Hyland, Patrick Charles, Dr. Swain, and Rudimental. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Harry Emerson Fosdick. No one can get inner peace by pouncing on it. Don't forget to check us out on all of our social media on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel with all of our interviews and segments, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. If you have any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.